the tabletop. Take away
game mechanics on display.
Three designers share the stage.
Pick a genre and we'll play
the tabletop. Take away.
Welcome back to the Tabletop Takeaway. I'm Ananda Gunaratna.
I'm Charlie McCarron.
And I'm Trevor Muller-Hagel.
And today we are starting our new series on miniatures war games. And where better to start it off than HeroScape?
Now, is it Hero Escape or Hero Landscape?
I believe it's Scape as in like landscape.
That makes more sense.
Yeah, I don't think it's...
The module we played, we were actually rescuing someone, so it felt like...
Yes.
Escape what we were doing, but yeah.
Yeah, okay. So HeroScape is a miniatures war game where you have a board that is made out of these hexagonal tiles that interlock to form very nice-looking 3D terrain. So the terrain is divided up into hexes. The hexes can have different heights. You can stack them on each other. There are some terrain features. In the game that we played, there were not very many terrain features. We just had a ruin. But there's also like trees and glaciers and lava and...
Water.
Yes, we did have water, like bridges. There's so many different terrain features. It's this whole terrain system where you can build a map. There's also a castle. I have the castle expansion. You can build these huge fortifications where the extreme fall damage mechanic actually becomes relevant. Anyway, so it's got some great table presence because of this interlocking hexagonal terrain. But aside from the terrain, you have an army which you either draft or your friend builds and then brings over, and then you play with the army that he made, which is what we did in this case.
Yep.
But you can also draft your army, or you could use pretty much any method you want. Each of the units costs some number of points. There's two types of unit, broadly speaking, in HeroScape. There's heroes and there's squads. A hero is one guy, and a squad is a bunch of guys, generally 2 to 4 units.
Or more.
Well, okay, this is where technically a squad is 2 to 4 units per card, but you can have multiple copies of the same card. So in this game, you had 3 copies of the zombies of Morandan, Trevor. Because they are a common squad. You can also have unique squads where you only get to have one copy of them. And there are also unique and common heroes. And the common heroes and the common squads encourage people to buy more copies of the game.
Sure.
Because...
Duplicates can stack.
Basically. Well, the advantage of having duplicates isn't that you get to move them all. So, like, if you have 2 copies of a common squad, you still only move... Like, if it's a squad of 3, you only get to move 3 of them. Mm-hmm. Like with my minions of Utgar, I had 6 of them, but I could only move 3 at a time.
Yeah.
But the advantage is that if one of them dies, you still get to move 3 of them until you're down to below their squad size. So generally, when building an army, you want to have...
Preserves.
You want to have at least 2 copies. Anyway, so you build your army, you set them up on the battlefield. You might, in general, there's some sort of scenario objectives. In this case, they were trying to rescue Sergeant Drake Alexander from the back of my starting zone, which they succeeded in doing. but, you know, you also might just have a simple death match, right?
Mm-hmm.
The units all have different abilities. They have attack, which is how many attack dice they roll when attacking. There's defense, how many defense dice when defending. Attacks are very simple. You roll attack dice, roll defense dice, and shield block skulls.
And attack and defense are the same dice.
Yes.
It's just a different number based on your stat.
Yeah, well, actually, in the original HeroScape, there were different dice.
Oh.
Red dice and blue dice, which I still have. But then later on, when in their second master set, they switched to having all one type of die.
Gotcha. Okay.
One type of dice. So it used to be 2 different types of dice, but then they realized they could put them all in the same dice.
Should save a lot of money and just do that. Oh, yeah. That makes sense.
Yes. So combat's very simple. You roll your dice, they roll their dice, match skulls against shields, and see if each unblocked skull is a hit. Units have a range, which is how far away they can attack. height advantage is you'd get to roll an extra die when attacking or defending if you're higher than your opponent. And then there's also movement range, which is number of tiles. And there's a bunch of other rules too. But in general, it does a pretty decent job of simulating the world, but, you know, in on a hexagonal grid.
Sure.
You've got like line of sight, which is just looking literally with your eye.
Yeah, through where they look with their eyes, yes. Which is kind of a weird...
You put your head behind the unit's head and then see what they can see.
if a dragon is blocking someone, then they're actually blocking someone.
Yeah. There's rules for engagements. There's rules for fall damage. There are climbing limits depending on the unit's height. There's all sorts of stuff. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. You build your army, they build their army, and you fight.
Yeah. So maybe since this is our first in the Miniatures War Game series, what would you say differentiates this type of game from Risk or a game like that? That is a war game, but we probably would not call it a miniatures war game because, right. For one,
you
like,
have an economy and you're making money. Well,
there's also no miniatures in Risk. I mean, there are pieces, but they're all the same piece.
They're not considered, yeah. Right. Sure. But, yeah.
They have different...
Which...
How about Axis versus Allies or something like that?
That's a little bit closer.
Or Stratego.
I think one of the defining features of miniatures war game is like the emphasis on the uniqueness of the pieces.
Yeah.
Because in Axis and Allies, yes, you have different types of unit, but they're all units of the same type, right? You've got, okay, tanks, but they're all the same tank. And I realize that in Heroescape, you have the same thing, but there's a much stronger identity to the units, right? Like, it's not, okay, here are my alien shooter guys. These are the Mara Warriors. You know, they, they're their own thing. Okay, that's maybe a more generic name. But, like, the Tarn Viking Warriors are a unit. The Krav Maga Agents. I guess, I hear that these sound like more generic names, but...
But there's lore.
There is lore, yes. And the heroes certainly are very unique.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and one of the differences seems to be, like, Risk and Axis versus Allies, for example, Axis and Allies, they're more like taking whole areas versus more of this tactical, like, space to space.
Right.
Or in a lot of miniatures games, you're actually measuring... with a ruler of some sort.
Like a Warhammer or things like that.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't think measurement versus hexes matters that much for the identity. I think the level... But what you're saying with Axis and Allies and Risk, the level of abstraction is a lot higher on Axis and Allies and Risk.
This is very specific battles.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the things you're manipulating are exactly what they represent, right?
Yeah.
Like
only one thing per space also.
Seems, yeah.
Or like... Yeah, physically, and also if there's hexes.
Or one thing for two spaces, for bigger things.
Yeah, like in Risk, you might have three soldiers in a country, but that doesn't mean you only literally have three soldiers. They're representing something.
300 or 3,000.
Right. Yeah. But in Heroescape, I've got a dragon right here, and it is literally a dragon. It's not like representing something.
On the other side of the river that you have to cross, but it can fly over.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is the dragon is a dragon. It's not representing an army of dragons or something.
Mm-hmm. So when comparing this to like our tactical combat series... Like, that one has, you know, a very similar concept, but that tends to be more almost RPG-based, where this one has a lot of units that you're kind of the commander of.
Yes, but I mean, this is also a tactical...
Right, it has,
combat game. It's...
Subgenre?
I would say it's a subgenre.
Yeah.
Of tactical combat.
Yeah, if we're talking chess as the tactical combat versus Heroescape, then, yeah, there are obviously similarities, especially because, you know, if you hit the... what are the basic units called again? The squads.
Squads.
They all have one hit point, which is the whole thing with chess. They all have one hit point.
Which, and if we did chess like one of your variants, Trevor, didn't you have a variant that was like choose which pieces you want to use?
Yeah, you can sacrifice. I had sacrificial chess was my favorite.
Yeah.
And then you could like, each one was worth different points based off of the type of unit. But yeah, it's, you can get crazy with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one thing that we talked about back in the tactical combat series was the notion of one move per turn.
Yeah.
And that is something that happens in HeroScape too. In HeroScape, you set order markers at the start of each round, and then you take turns revealing your lowest order marker and activating that unit. And if it's a hero, you move that hero and attack with it. And if it's a squad, you move a number of units equal to the number in that squad and do things with them. And you can activate the same thing multiple times.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the cool thing to me is that you can actually put all of your markers on one of your cards. And it can get pretty dynamic, especially if it's on a squad. And you're just sending them to the far reaches and doing all this stuff in a very short amount of time, which feels really good. Mm-hmm. Especially because each one gets its own move and its own attack or its own special action.
Yeah, especially in this scenario. That's how we ended up winning when Trevor and I teamed up, because I had one ninja that I put... I had four ninjas to start. They all like got picked off.
Only half. Then,
oh, half. Yes, that's right. I kept one ninja behind on one of the glyphs, which is kind of a cool sub-feature in this game where if you stand on certain places, they give you a buff to your army in some way. So I kept the one ninja there giving me one defense while my other ninja moved three times and got up the cliff, over the river, and
phased through enemies, killed a bunch of people.
Well, and specifically, she had the ability to move and attack at the same time.
Yeah, multiple times.
Which meant she was able to take out my guard and then move onto the space needed to rescue the prisoner. Yeah. Whereas other units who attack after moving would not have been able to do that.
And a huge defense, which made it so those five archers could not do anything to her.
Yeah.
It was great.
I think my takeaway actually is related to what's happening right now. Is there, we can make a very clear story about what happened during this game.
Yeah.
Because visually you see it, like it's these awesome character figures, and in space too. I remember exactly like what happened when you moved your giant dragon out.
Yeah.
And then you had to retreat the dragon because Trevor's character was sniping from the back.
And I was about to attack him with all my zombies.
Well, it was wounded and I was trying to get it to the healing glyph.
Yeah. Oh, yep.
So I just love that storytelling aspect of this. And HeroScape in particular has like all these crazy factions that you would not think to smash together zombies and dragons and stuff.
Sharpshooters.
The lore of the game is that on the planet Valhalla, these Valkyries are summoning legendary warriors from all across time and space. So it's a multiverse, so you can do anything. Like
perfect.
There's these robots fighting alongside cowboys. And,
we've all been there.
But, I mean, what you say, Charlie, is true. And, I mean, just this game, I can play it back in my head, everything that happened quite easily.
Yeah.
And I have stories from games that I've played. One of the interesting thing about HeroScape is some of the mechanics are very low probability. The most egregious example, I think, is Nagoxa, who is a Maro... is he a warlord? I think he's a warlord because he has Waro bonding with the, anyway.
Very important point.
But, Nagoxa's ability, is called Mind Shackle 20. And the way it works is you roll a d20, and if you roll a 20, you get to take control of an adjacent, enemy unit permanently. And the thing about it is, roll it. This is instead of using his attack,
to an adjacent unit.
Right,
going to attack him.
So like you're using your entire turn for a 5% chance of. And to be fair, it is amazing if it works. Like taking control of an enemy unit, that's incredible. But only 5% chance of that happening. But they just do it. And I think. I definitely remember it happening in games I played, especially once they released the Grok Riders who have bonding. There's this mechanic called bonding in HeroScape where we didn't have it in our game, but you take a turn with one unit and it bonds with another unit, which means that unit also gets to take a turn.
Oh, wow.
So like the Grok Riders bond with Maro Warlords. So whenever you activate the Grok Riders... you get to first activate a Mara Warlord, which means that Mind Shackle is less risky because it's not taking up your whole turn.
Oh, interesting. Hmm.
But I guess another very low probability and pretty hilarious mechanic is with the Molten Lava terrain, which is that when you move a unit into Molten Lava, you roll a d20, and if you roll a 20, that unit survives. That actually happened to me once because there was another unit that pushed my guy into the lava. These low probability mechanics, they seem like a complete waste.
Yeah.
You know, all those rules for something that almost never happens. But when it happens, you remember it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's just like a critical hit in D&D.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's still a 20 usually. But yeah, it's really interesting how having those little things can really pop the story.
Yes.
I mean, I had a character who had a 19 to 20 on a d20, and it would instant kill anything on the field. Mm. So I could have instant killed the dragon.
Yeah.
But I never used it because I'm like, 19 or 20, that's 10% chance.
Well, the dragon also died early.
Dragon died early.
Yeah, I mean, if you were playing a game with something absolutely ridiculous, like, I don't know, Jotun or Thanos, that would be an incredible ability because 10%, you know, you hit it enough, you can get rid of like 200, 300 points worth of enemies in one attack.
One shot.
Thanos is a character in Heroescape, by the
Perfect.
Way.
Perfect.
you can play Thanos. He's like 360, 380 points or something.
Holy cow.
Does he do the snap his finger move and try to remove?
this was from before the Marvel movies, so that I'm sure if it were made nowadays, he would have some ability like that. But back then, his ability is called Rejected by Death. After he's killed, every round you get to roll the d20, and if you roll, I forget what it is, but if you roll a certain number, he comes back to life, and you get to redeploy him. And he has really good stats, too.
Hmm.
Rejected by Death in the days before
MCU,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
So something I really liked that HeroScape does is the order markers. Where you have to somewhat pre-program who you're going to use, and one is a fake out. So you, but I like that you have to commit to which ones you're using and the order you're using them. So you can't like overthink
before knowing initiative too.
Yeah, and I think that solves one thing that might be a little stale maybe in a Minis game where, you just use whatever you want anytime, or at least like...
Or every unit has initiative and then you track the initiative order for all of the units on the field.
Yep.
And then you're like, okay, and then you have to decide for every unit their move and attack or move and action.
Yep.
This one, you have three actions effectively.
Yep.
Who's going to get them? And then you predetermine that together at the same time.
Yeah. But then once it's set, you don't have to think about it. You just have to respond with that.
Yep.
And it's got the same feeling in Gloomhaven, too, where you're kind of determining how fast you're going to go at the beginning and what card you're going to play.
Yeah.
But then you could still kind of change your mind about what you actually do.
And Mage Wars, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Mage Wars also is kind of... Like, it's basically a miniatures game without minis.
Right. Yeah.
And, of course, we talked about that one before. Interesting thing about the order marker system, one move per turn, the fact that you can have the same unit go multiple times in a row means that one strategy that you do often see is players send their guys out in waves.
Yeah.
Like in our game, I sent the dragon out first, supported by the minions of Utgar to take some of the glyphs. And then... you know, I focused more on the minions of Utgar, and then once they start dying off, then I switch to the samurai.
Yeah.
But you don't want to send out too many units at once, otherwise you're dividing your order markers.
Yeah.
Well, and also if you send out a bunch of... if you send out only one faction at a time, they might die early, and then you wasted the rest of your action markers.
But in this scenario, there was a little bit of counter pressure there because, you know, there's the glyphs that you want to control.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you guys were on a timer to get to Sergeant Drake Alexander, right? Yeah.
We couldn't just hang out and, you know, try to shoot people from afar. We actually had to get there in time.
Yeah. And, of course, I had to go after you because you had a sniper. So,
yep.
It feels like, just on that note, feels like having a scenario or some sort of timer on things is key for these kind of games, where it's like, rather than just an all-out, I don't know how the death matches work, but if people are incentivized to just hide out and run away, that's not a really good thing. So it's nice to have that time, that objective. You got to get to a certain place in a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
It was nice.
Well, and the glyphs, I think, also help a lot with that, because if you turtle, that means your opponent gets all the glyphs. And those glyphs have some pretty insane buffs, actually. Yeah. Like, the glyph of Astrid is just like plus one attack across the board for your whole army. There is a character called Taylord the Kyrie Warrior, who costs 180 points. And his whole thing is he has an aura that buffs the attack of your units within four spaces by one, which is great, but it's super expensive. And all you have to do is stand on that glyph and you get the same thing for your whole army.
Right.
Mm.
So glyphs are super powerful, and controlling them is a big part of the game.
Well, and if you're in a one versus all like you were in, that's really great because you have a lot more units that can reap that benefit.
Yeah.
Even though you have the same number of actions, you have a lot more potential use of that.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah. Actually, another benefit of the one move per turn thing, where you can, and being able to assign multiple order markers to the same unit, is that you can get some really cool comebacks, because losing units does not mean losing actions.
That's a really good point.
Having more units is good, obviously, but you're still taking the same number of turns.
You're just reducing the versatility of action as opposed to reducing number of actions.
Yeah. Yes, I remember one game very vividly, and this is an example of, you know, this kind of stories you can create with Minis War Games, where there's this vampire called Cyprian Eisenwine. He costs 150 points, his whole thing is he has stealth flying, a huge movement range, and he can drain health back with his special ability from enemies. Like, he deals a wound and he heals a wound in addition to his attack. And in this game, it was a free-for-all, three-player game, free-for-all. And Cyprian basically soloed both enemy armies by himself because he would fly somewhere and drain someone. And then before, you know, I was looking at where their order markers were.
Yeah.
He has a crazy movement range. And then before they could do anything about it, he would fly somewhere else to some units that didn't have order markers on them, and it would just start draining them. And so eventually they teamed up against me, but like he soloed 2 500-point armies by himself.
Wow.
Just because I kept assigning actions and he kept draining back all of the life that he was losing.
Amazing. Well, and I think just talking about this storytelling element of miniatures war games, they're the creation of role-playing games. That's where we got D&D originally, was from wargaming.
Mm.
And so it makes sense that, you know, they're having these war games and they're telling these stories. Like, hey, I want to have this one character, but like a lot more detail, even more detail than these 3 or 4 or 5 abilities. I want to level them up. I want to go through a whole story with these characters. And it feels like such a natural progression now, obviously after the fact. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just so great having that kind of narrative spring up from just playing a game together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Miniatures games do an amazing job of, because they're so simulative.
Mm-hmm.
It does really make it very memorable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for my takeaway, it's not going to be as exciting, but like, I really enjoyed the different levels of the terrain and the fact that all of us could go up the terrain. It just costs movement to do so. And so obviously if you're like, I have zombies that are 4 movement, they can't get over something that's over their height. Is that right?
The climbing rules are you can't climb something that's equal to or greater than your height.
But yeah, we had all these different ways that you could either ascend or descend. And then, you know, if you're on something higher than your opponent, then you get an advantage. And inverse is true, too. If you're attacking someone upward, that's harder. And it's just like you're saying, the simulative feel of that just feels much more thematic and much more, more of a story that's happening.
And it's achieved without that many rules, honestly. And all, yeah. The rules are pretty intuitive.
Yeah, move, then you attack with this many die or defend with this many die.
Yeah.
By and large. Range and are
you
many.
Higher up, then you get an advantage with one more die. Yep. Yeah, it's nice because I have played other games similar that are just on a flat board.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of like, oh, this terrain changes how you move here, and this, oh, this part is actually higher, so you have to calculate like how much.
Right.
And yeah, it's, I liked how this one's just very straightforward, and physically you can see.
Yeah. How the line of sight is great. There's yeah. It's just like, okay, can you see them? Great, then you can attack them. Now, obviously, you know, there's some ambiguity in can you actually see them.
Right.
But in like 99% of cases, it doesn't matter that much.
Right, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. And you have fun little things like the zombies, their only legal targeting zone is their head, so you can only shoot them in the head.
So if their heads are blocked by something somehow, then you can't just hit their body.
Yeah. I think there are a lot of takeaways I could have from HeroScape. I think maybe the one that I'll go with is pretty specific, which is the way that water works.
Oh, sure.
So in HeroScape, the rules for water are when you enter water, you stop moving, and that's it.
Yeah.
And the reason I like this is obviously water is a type of terrain that is slowing you down. Mm-hmm. And plenty of games have terrains that slow you down. Often the way it works is, okay, there's some number of movement points. And it
costs one extra movement to move through.
Right.
Yeah.
And that introduces some annoying math.
Right.
And I really like the rule that just, okay, you move onto that tile, you stop.
Yeah.
I've done that a little bit in Junkernauts.
Oh, sure.
I have rugs where the rule is if you move onto the rug, you stop. If you move off the rug, you stop. I think it's a great rule for terrain that hinders movement because it's very easy to evaluate and you don't have to worry about, oh, well, this unit's super slow, so they can't even move onto it in the first place. So it's like, no, you can move onto it. You just have to stop moving.
Right. And so you use your last movement to get into the water.
Exactly. That well,
and that's an efficient use and that feels smart.
Yes, that is also true.
Yeah.
It gives players a chance to feel smart about their pathing. So,
I like it. Do you think, like HeroScape, are there people who, I'm sure there are, like treat it like Magic or another collectible type game where you're customizing and trying to find the best combo of units?
Oh, yeah.
And try to respond to whoever.
Yeah, yeah. There's a whole community. All sorts of, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. And even today, I'm sure I haven't looked into the community in years, but I'm sure it's quite active even nowadays, especially now that they've relaunched HeroScape with new content.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that's HeroScape. Tune in next time when we talk about Necromolds.
Mm-hmm. Hey. Thanks for listening to The Tabletop Takeaway. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. So please tell your friends and visit our website at thetabletoptakeaway.com where you can suggest games and mechanics for us to cover next on the show.